I asked Judge Kavanaugh directly if he held such views. And he said no, and I believe him.
Senator Dan Sullivan defends Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and his record on Native American issues. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, September 14th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, federal and state officials apologize to Alaska Natives for a law that made it difficult to practice subsistence bird hunting.
It's because of you and your elders that we are publicly acknowledging this history and that we've been given the opportunity to heal from past mistakes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Did you know there's no safe amount of alcohol to drink while pregnant? But why should this matter if you're not pregnant or not trying to be? Because nearly half of all pregnancies are unplanned. Many women don't know they're pregnant right away. You could get pregnant and expose your baby to alcohol even before you know you're pregnant. If you're having unprotected sex, don't drink. Learn how FASDs impact everyone, even you, at letstalkfasdak.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan says he has spoken to Brett Kavanaugh amid Kavanaugh's pending nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court about concerns raised by the Alaska Federation of Natives this week. AFN announced Wednesday it opposes Kavanaugh's appointment to the High Court, citing his past opinions on Native rights. AFN is the oldest and largest Native organization in the state. Alaska's other senator, Lisa Murkowski, is seen as a potential swing vote in Kavanaugh's confirmation. But Senator Sullivan has said, and after talking to Kavanaugh, still says he will vote to confirm the Trump nominee. Speaking to reporters today in his Anchorage office, Sullivan said that if he thought Kavanaugh was hostile or opposed to Alaska Native interests, he would not support his confirmation.
And yesterday, I asked Judge Kavanaugh directly if he held such views. And he said no, and I believe him.
Part of AFN's opposition had to do with a memo Kavanaugh wrote about Native Hawaiians not being legally recognized as tribes. Asked if he thought Alaska Native tribal recognition would be safe with Kavanaugh as a justice on the Supreme Court, Sullivan said yes.
I'm not saying that's an illegitimate line of reasoning, but they are apples and oranges legally. I think the Hawaii case is completely non-applicable to Alaska Natives.
Sullivan was traveling from Washington, D.C. to Alaska today as news broke about allegations against Kavanaugh that he sexually assaulted a woman in high school, something Kavanaugh strongly denied. Sullivan said he was still getting caught up on the news, but would have serious concerns about voting to confirm Kavanaugh if the allegations turned out to be true. Late last year, Congress ordered the federal government to hold oil lease sales in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Defying opponents who say the land is too ecologically important to drill, the Trump administration has prioritized carrying out the new law. Now, without offering many details, a top Trump administration official is accusing Fish and Wildlife Service employees of making that job more difficult. Elizabeth Harbaugh of Alaska's Energy Desk has the story.
As we were wrapping up an interview on a separate issue last month, Joe Balash stopped me from shutting off my recorder.
So, on a different topic, since I have you here.
Balash's official title is Assistant Secretary for Land and Minerals Management. He's one of the top political appointees at the Interior Department right now, and he's overseeing the process to kickstart oil development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And Balash went on to describe what he called a difficult management challenge with Fish and Wildlife Service employees. He said during a recent meeting with the agency in Alaska, he felt employees weren't eager to carry out the new law.
You could just tell from all of the nonverbal communication going on in the room that they were not happy to see us. They were not happy to talk about this. They still weren't necessarily prepared to accept this new reality.
Balash is the head of some divisions within the Interior Department, including the Bureau of Land Management, but the Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't report to him. He accused Fish and Wildlife employees of creating challenges for Interior as it works to pursue oil development in ANWR. Balash gave just one specific example. This spring, the Washington Post obtained documents submitted to the Fish and Wildlife Service outlining plans to begin the search for oil in the refuge. Balash thinks those documents were leaked by Fish and Wildlife employees, although it's not clear where they came from. A Washington Post reporter who worked on the story declined to say. Still, Balash said he's asking management at the Fish and Wildlife Service to address what he views as a problem in the agency.
taking steps every so often to help remind people that there's a real need to be professional and not allow those very human feelings to get in the way of doing the job that the American Congress has charged us with.
Balazs did not explicitly threaten jobs over this issue. He said Interior needs the knowledge of longtime Fish and Wildlife Service employees to carry out the oil leasing program. A spokesperson with the Alaska Fish and Wildlife Service office declined to comment on Balazs's remarks. But Rosa Meehan, a former longtime Fish and Wildlife Service manager in Alaska, says she's confident workers at the agency are acting appropriately.
I absolutely believe in the integrity and professionalism of the Fish and Wildlife Service and all my colleagues in the service.
Meehan says she's concerned about Balazs's words about employees not being on board with oil lease sales in the refuge. She says the federal environmental review process is meant to be an objective, scientific discussion of all potential impacts. That includes impacts that could be viewed as negative, and it's the Fish and Wildlife Service's job to point them out, no matter what.
It makes it sound as if you don't really want to hear that anything that could be interpreted as opposing or saying this is really a bad idea or pointing out significant impacts or potential impacts. And that's what's really uncomfortable about this.
The Interior Department aims to put out a draft environmental review on oil leasing in Anwar in the coming months. Like all environmental reviews, this will present the option to do nothing. But it's not a real option. No matter what the analysis says, Congress ordered Interior to hold the first oil lease sale in the refuge by the end of 2021. And the Trump administration wants to get it done even sooner than that. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
The candidates for governor have been invited to 7 debates or speaking events since the primary. Independent Governor Bill Walker and Democratic former U.S. Senator Mark Begich have been at all 7. Republican former state senator Mike Dunleavy has been at 3. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reached out to the candidates and the event organizers to talk about Dunleavy's attendance record.
On Thursday night, the Anchorage Downtown Partnership and other community organizations hosted a candidate forum. Walker, Begich, and Libertarian Billy Toyin sat at a table. There also was an empty seat, in case Dunleavy changed his mind. Partnership Marketing Director Penny Smythe says Dunleavy's campaign said they had penciled in the event well ahead of time before saying he wouldn't come.
We certainly were looking forward to hearing from all candidates.
Dunleavy also hasn't shown up at the Alaska Municipal League's conference in Healy, the Alaska AFL-CIO's conference in Anchorage, and the Accelerate Alaska event in Anchorage, which was focused on growing Alaska's businesses. He has attended Chamber of Commerce events in Juneau and Anchorage and the Southeast Conference in Ketchikan. The organizers for Accelerate Alaska, the AFL-CIO, and the Municipal League all say they received tentative confirmations from the Dunleavy campaign before he either canceled or, in the case of the AFL-CIO, didn't show up. Dunleavy's campaign says the Downtown Partnership knew well in advance that he had a scheduling conflict on Thursday and that he had never committed to attending. The campaign gave this written statement from Dunleavy. Quote, "Throughout this campaign, I've participated in nearly 24 town halls, debates, and forums, even more public events, 24 meetings with the press, 100 radio call-ins, and dozens more fairs, festivals, and sporting events where I heard directly from Alaskans," end quote. Dunleavy also says Walker skipped the primary and Begich skipped the last 4 years of discussion. For their part, the other candidates criticized Dunleavy. Here's Begich.
He doesn't want to answer the detailed questions that are required to explain his extreme views on how he's going to solve the budget, which I think is a challenge for him. I think his ability to talk about his positions on social issues, because he has very extreme positions there.
Begich says he's been raising Dunleavy's positions in the events where he's absent.
He's realizing that debating on these issues means you actually have to answer the questions and have specifics, and he doesn't want to do that.
Walker says Dunleavy's absences were consistent with his record.
I'm not surprised. You know, he's not showing up a lot of things. He didn't show up at the legislative session last year. The toughest of the 4 years was last year, the fourth quarter of the game, and he wasn't there for that either. So I don't know. He seems to not show up.
Walker says the Alaska governor should speak to all groups.
I think he points out how he would govern when he doesn't show up. He'll govern to his friends, and not the whole state is the problem.
The next scheduled candidate forum will be hosted by the Anchorage NAACP on Thursday. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a festival in Petersburg teaches locals about the finer points of salmon.
Their hormones are just going nuts. Like, their stress hormones are off the charts. Their body's decomposing. Their immune system's gone. They start to get covered with fungus.
That's it. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Starting October 1st, all of Alaska will be protected from the harmful effects of secondhand smoke because all public places across the state will be smoke-free. Everyone can now breathe easier as they work and play. Smoke-free workplaces and public spaces protects the health of all Alaskans. It also protects our youth from ever starting smoking. So if you do smoke or vape, please take it outside. For more information about the new smoke-free workplace law, visit smokefree.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Department of Health and Social Services.
State and federal wildlife officials have apologized to Alaska Natives for the enforcement of migratory bird regulations that failed to consider the effects on subsistence practices. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issued the joint apology Thursday for the consequences of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which prohibited the spring and summer harvests of migratory birds and their eggs during the 1960s and 70s. Greg Sikanik is the regional director for the Alaska region of the Fish and Wildlife Service. He said he was thankful for Native groups for educating the departments about how they were affected by these regulations.
It's because of you and your elders that we are publicly acknowledging this history and that we've been given the opportunity to heal from past mistakes.
Officials say the prohibition caused Alaska Natives to lose an important food source, causing many to hunt illegally to feed their families. The law was changed in 1997. The apology came at a meeting of a Migratory Bird Management Council that has representation from the state and federal groups and Native groups. Officials from the Native groups said they were grateful for the apology, but they also said there's still work to do to loosen federal regulations so that they better align with Native subsistence traditions. Jennifer Hooper is Natural Resources Director at a Bethel-based village organization.
In our region, there's several villages that are very strong in their beliefs on, you know, how regulated and how pressured they are to fit into this, you know, this Western system of management.
Hooper said there's still some dissatisfaction with an annual 30-day hunting closure to protect nesting birds. That's because the dates of the 30-day closure are the same across her whole Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region, even though different parts of that area might have different needs and nesting patterns. Residents in Anchorage are organizing to change the city's response to homelessness. They say the current approach is too narrowly focused on long-term housing and has allowed lawless camps to persist along popular trails. The frustration has turned once sleepy public meetings into increasingly contentious events. And as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, one couple is at the center of it all.
The Anchorage Assembly's Committee on Homelessness used to be kind of dull. It was where members would get briefed on data and observe elaborate flowcharts of social service programs. Occasionally, a member of the public would share their piece about an issue giving them grief. But now, those same committee meetings have become, frankly, dramatic.
All right, let's go ahead and get this regular Assembly Committee on Homelessness to order.
The meetings are packed, routinely a standing room only affair. A group of older residents, many of them retired and active in community councils, has started filling out the audience, grumbling, testifying, and chiding assembly members if they don't speak loudly enough. Russ Webb and his wife, Stephanie Rhodes, are at the front of the fight. Webb's frustration peaked at a recent meeting over a set of policy proposals the assembly has continually delayed taking up.
I would have brought that draft proposal to this committee for discussion today.
Webb and Rhodes are unlikely antagonists in a fight over homeless issues. Both voted for Mayor Ethan Berkowitz. Webb even maxed out his contributions to the reelection campaign. Before retiring, both had long careers working for the state on topics like mental health, homelessness, and substance abuse. Now, with more time on their hands, they're working long hours to try to shape the city's response to the issue. Speaking at home in the well-to-do South Addition neighborhood between downtown and the Chester Creek Trail, Webb explains the 12-point plan for dealing with nearby homeless camps he submitted to the assembly.
The proposals are intended to push the municipality to develop a system to actually comprehensively and continuously identify camps, engage campers, move folks who need help to the systems that will help them, and to enforce the prohibitions against all the public nuisances within and emanating from the camps.
Webb is extremely organized. The 12 points touch on everything from adjustments to municipal code, expanding shelter options, increasing funding for specific jobs, and even thinning vegetation along trails in order to improve sight lines. Rhodes is a former judge who helped establish a mental health court, and she knows what illness, substance abuse, and personal tragedy look like. She says the people she encounters in the camps, though, don't all fit into those categories.
There is a tremendous pocket of crime that is a subset of the folks who are camping.
The couple know the camps better than most. They go in, take pictures, talk with people, sometimes get into arguments, and have generally tried to educate themselves about what's happening on the trail system they so frequently use. Their main criticism is that the administration has become overly focused on getting hard-to-house residents into permanent housing and connected with social services, and they say that's come at the expense of effectively curbing illegal camping that is ruining residential life and allowing misery to go unchecked in the woods.
It's just too slow of a process to be able to adequately address the encampments and the issues that are impacting the community.
Since coming into office, Mayor Ethan Berkowitz's administration has made progress on a housing first model that creates new permanent residential units. The administration says its policies have helped more than 300 people get into housing over the last few years. They have plans to roughly double that figure by 2021. City Homelessness Coordinator Nancy Burke says their actions are making progress on the issue, even though that isn't always readily visible to residents.
We agree. There is not enough that's happening. However, in the last 3 years, we've built a foundation for us to take the camp abatement process and actually assisting people to move out of those locations.
Burke points out the administration and assembly recently revised the city's strategy for evicting campers. It increased waste removal by public employees and improved data collection on where camps are being established. She says the city is constantly trying to balance the demands of residents for clean, safe public parks with respect for campers' civil rights.
We have chosen to focus on the solutions that will end this problem for Anchorage, so we're not having this same conversation in 5 years.
Recently, Burke's been at community council meetings around town where residents are discussing support for the 12-point plan. All measures, though, she stresses, need to be part of the broader public process. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, investing in Alaska by hosting local interns and donating to University of Alaska programs like the UAA Summer Engineering Academy. More at bp.com/Alaska. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Salmon Party. The 11th annual Rainforest Festival wrapped up in Petersburg last weekend, and this year's theme was salmon, but there were many events on and off the water. KFSK's Angela Denning attended a couple to find out about Alaska's most popular fish.
About 20 miles south of Petersburg by road, a few Chinook salmon are slowly swimming in a very shallow gravel creek. They're not looking very fresh at this point.
Oh, there's digging right there. You see the female on her side?
Megan McPhee is leading our small group. She's with the College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences with the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
She's flopping, and so what she's doing is she's digging a depression in the gravel, and that does two things. It makes a little hole that she can put the eggs in, and then it also, you'll notice when she does that, you'll see a cloud of silt come up in the water and then float away, so it cleans the silt out of the gravel.
Too much silt isn't good for the eggs because it can suffocate them. Salmon are an unusual fish because while most species take days to weeks for their eggs to hatch, salmon take months. They overwinter in the gravel. Today, the effort to nest these eggs is everything these salmon are living for.
Their hormones are just going nuts. Like, their stress hormones are off the charts. Their body's decomposing. Their immune system's gone. They start to get covered with fungus because their scales resorb into their bodies, so they have calcium in their bodies. And they just fall apart. It's really interesting and kind of sad.
McPhee gave the festival's keynote address at the town's auditorium. She's done a lot of salmon research around Alaska and has studied why salmon are smaller than they used to be. She says there are likely several reasons why. One is because they're returning to spawn at a younger age. Studies show that salmon are growing faster and returning to spawn earlier, and that makes them smaller.
So it's kind of a paradox, like a faster growing fish will actually be among the smaller of the adults because they surpass a threshold for size at an earlier age where their internal status tells them it's time to mature.
Another reason could be an increase in predators targeting larger salmon specifically, like killer whales and salmon sharks. There are a lot of unknowns. She says there's much more research that needs to be done. But just today's information alone has taught Arian Pregenzer a lot about salmon. She's visiting the Rainforest Festival from New Mexico.
Any little thing, you can ask questions and they're telling you stuff, and so your mind starts generating more questions.
Oh yeah,
you know?
That's true.
Agreeing with her is Petersburg resident Lori Dial.
The most amazing thing about salmon, though, is how they can find their way back.
The olfactory map.
Yeah, they smell.
Yeah.
But, you know, I couldn't find my way back like that.
I know.
Based on that, that's amazing.
In town, at another festival workshop, a dozen kids are looking at fungi in black plastic trays that cover two tables.
What's this?
That's another kind of, like, there's some moss in there too, though. You see the green stuff underneath?
Yeah.
That's a moss, and this part's a lichen.
Explaining the fungi is mycologist Ron Hamill.
Really, this is only a small representative sample of what's actually here. There's many, many more species than this. I have logged over 500 species from Southeast Alaska so far, and that's still just scratching the surface.
Hamill became obsessed with fungi when he was in college about 30 years ago. He says the forest wouldn't be the same without it. Trees would be about human height without the nutrients and water provided by fungi.
Really, everything on Earth is mediated by fungi. They're the great recyclers of the planet. They work in the rivers. They actually break down the fish and make those available on the plant banks. They're responsible for many of our foods. We wouldn't have beer or bread without fungi.
Hamill believes educating people on the importance of fungi will help them understand the fragile nature of the forest ecosystem. It's relatively easy to study salmon when they're spawning in a creek, but it's much harder when they're hundreds of miles away in the deep ocean. There's a real lack of data for that part of their lives. McPhee says a big challenge is the technology to track the fish. Some tagging projects have actually attracted salmon sharks to the fish because of the large batteries they're carrying. So really, what could help is a better power source for the tags.
If you could somehow use the energy of the fish swimming muscles to somehow recharge something, that would maybe work. I'm not an engineer. I'm talking nonsense, but
in any case, McPhee says what is definitely needed is an international effort in ocean-going surveys, having a lot of people in a lot of places working on the same goal to find out what does happen to the salmon out there. And then they can share that knowledge with the public in a festival like this. For AK, I'm Angela Denning.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Bobby Sue Wolk in Anchorage. Wolk is originally from California and was the state's first licensed professional coach with the International Coaching Federation. Today, she helps health professionals manage their stress.
Let's say I was young and needed a change, and I had no idea what Alaska was going to hold for me, and I fell in love with it. Surprise to me, of all people, so I'm still here. I quickly was realizing I didn't really have any skills, so I went back to University of Alaska, majoring in accounting. Not that I loved accounting, but I needed a job at the end of the college, so that's how I got into my accounting profession. So it was in my mid-40s when I went back and got my master's in industrial organizational psychology. That's when I learned about coaching, and so for the past 15 years, I've just keep learning more and more about coaching and people and kind of getting certifications along the way. The medical community is under such high stress. Doctor burnout is at a record high. Healthcare professionals are burning out. They're super stressed out. So the well-being coaching actually will help them. I have tools and ways to work with them to help alleviate their stress. Only in Alaska could a single person at 32 start their own accounting business, and people believed enough in me to give me a chance. Only in Alaska can I start a new career at 45 and people give me a chance. And only in Alaska, I'm now 48, I'm starting the health and well-being coaching. I don't think I could have ever achieved the success or have the opportunities that I do here if I would have stayed in California.
Bobby Sue Wolk lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Angela Denning and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Harbaugh, Zachariah Hughes, and Nat Herz in Anchorage, and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. And by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com. Want a fulfilling volunteer opportunity educating and protecting your community? As a trained Medicare counselor, you'll help stop fraud and connect people with the benefits they've earned. You can make a powerful difference for Alaska seniors. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or call Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.